The saws never stop screaming on that site. Dust hangs in the air and sticks to sweat, and every move feels watched, even when no one is looking. Cade feels it worst when his phone buzzes in his pocket. A short message, a place to meet, a reminder that he is already over a line he cannot uncross. He slips between stacks of block and rebar during breaks and finds Rena there. Work boots, hard hat, clever eyes that used to light up when she saw him. Now she glances past his shoulder, toward the office trailer, toward the man who signs their timesheets and controls who stays on and who gets cut loose. On this site, nothing stays secret for long. Not damaged material, not missing hours, not two workers who think they can hide in half-framed rooms. One careless look, one stray word, and the wrong person will learn that the project manager's partner is sneaking around with a man from the crew. Chapter 1, The Line Crosses. The morning starts before the sun gets a clean look at the steel. Generators rumble. A crane beeps in slow, stubborn bursts while it swings a pallet of block into place. Nail guns crack on the upper floors. Every sound on the site feels sharp, like it wants blood. Cade shoulders his tool bag and steps through mud that never seems to dry. Concrete dust clings to his jeans and throat. The foreman yells the day's targets, a flood of numbers and deadlines that no one believes but everyone pretends to chase. Behind all that noise, Cade hears the one thing that actually matters to him, the small vibration in his pocket. He waits until he is clear of the foreman's eyes, then checks the screen. One message from Rena, a time, a direction, no names, no hearts. Even the words feel scared now. He clears the message and wipes the screen with a thumb that will not stop shaking. They meet behind a line of rust-spotted containers where the wind dies and the smell of oil feels trapped. Rena leans against steel, arms folded, hard hat low. Her orange vest glows in the narrow strip of early light. A month ago, she would have smiled first. Now she only nods. "You should not text me during shift," she says. Her voice is quiet, flat. "If they check phones, both of us are done." Cade steps closer anyway. The little private spaces they steal on the site have become the only parts of his day that feel real. Half-framed rooms with no windows yet, stairwells where the lights do not work, corners of scaffolding that no camera can see. Until this week, those pockets of concrete and shadow carried heat between them. Now they hold something colder. "You answered," he says, "so you still wanted to see me." "I came so I could tell you to stop," she answers. She glances past him toward the open yard. They brought more eyes this week. Safety, quality, all kinds. He looks at her and tries to read what changed. The first days, she was all fast jokes and sharp questions. She worked like someone who had something to prove. She kissed him for the first time in a dark stairwell that smelled of fresh paint and dust. That memory still pulls at him. Today, her jaw is tight, and her hand stays on her phone the whole time. "You are acting like you do not know me," he says. "What happened since Friday?" Rena shifts off the container and steps away from him. "Things on this site are not what you think," she says. "Just keep your head down and work. That is the best thing you can do." She walks off before he can answer. The crane swings, men shout, and the moment closes around him like concrete setting in a form. Later, during lunch, Cade sits on a pile of covered material and chews food that tastes like sand. Two supervisors stand a few feet away, trading gossip in low voices while they look over the day's schedule. He is not trying to listen, but their words cut through the engine noise. "He is tense since his partner came on the crew," one says. "You can tell he is afraid she will see something and blow up." "Partner from home, right?" the other asks. "They said they've been together for years. Dangerous move, bringing that into a site this size." "Long term," the first replies. "If anyone plays smart, they will not cross that line. Man can make your life real hard if you touch what is his." They laugh in a dry way that holds no real humor, then walk off toward the office trailer. Cade stares at his lunch and forgets to swallow. He looks across the yard and counts the women on the crew in his head. Not many. Only one who moves through the site with that mix of newness and authority that Rena carries. He puts the pieces together and his stomach turns. The long-term partner on the crew, the project manager who watches everything, Rena's sudden distance, the warning about phones, the way her eyes jump toward the trailer before every answer. Rena crosses the yard with a clipboard in her hand. She talks to the electrician, flags an issue, then heads toward the office. The project manager steps out as she reaches the steps. They stand close. Too close for a simple sight talk. He cannot hear the words from where he sits, but he can see the way her shoulders tighten and the way the manager's hand brushes the air between them. A small gesture that carries ownership. They disappear inside the trailer for several minutes. When she finally comes out, she looks straight across the yard at Cade. For a second, the whole sight seems to narrow to that line of sight. Her expression is not warm and not friendly. It is warning. She finds him near the end of shift as he coils extension cords. The light is low and orange across the slab. Men call goodbye over the sound of tools shutting down. "You have to delete everything," she says. "No greeting. No small talk. Every message, every photo, every stupid thing we send each other. Now." Cade lowers the cord. "You are the manager's partner," he says. The words feel heavy coming out. "From before this job." Something flashes in her eyes. Not surprise, not denial, just a quick flare of anger that he now knows the word for what she is hiding. "Do not use that word," she says. "We live together. That is all you need to know. I told you stop texting. You did not listen. Now it is not only your problem." He looks at her, searching for any trace of the person who met him in half-built rooms and laughed about the chaos around them. "So what was all of that then?" he asks. "You were bored, curious, just wanted to see what you could get away with." Rena steps closer. Her voice drops. "What it was does not matter now," she says. "What matters is who gets hurt if the wrong person sees a message on the wrong day. And I promise you, he will not blame me first." A truck reverses behind them, and someone shouts a warning. The moment breaks, but the pressure does not. She turns away, already done with the conversation. "Delete them," she says over her shoulder. "And stop calling me, at work or outside, if you know what is good for you." Cade watches her walk back toward the job trailer, where the project manager stands on the steps talking to a supplier. The manager's hand rests on the rail. His eyes move across the site, ticking over men and machines. Cade feels that gaze like heat on his back, even before it reaches him. He digs out his phone, thumb hovering over the message thread. He can clear it in seconds. Erase every trace of the line he crossed. Forget the way she looked at him the first time. Pretend the last month never happened. The generator coughs and revs. Whistles blow for end of shift. Dust rises around him. Cade locks the screen without deleting anything. If she wants him to act like nothing happened, she owes him more than half answers and orders. He slips the phone back into his pocket and makes a choice that hardens inside him. He will not walk away blind. He will find out what game he has been pulled into, and who is really holding the power over his job and his name. Chapter 2, The Pressure Tightens. By the next week, the site feels slower and harsher at the same time. Clipboards appear in more hands. New faces in hard hats move through each floor, checking tags and taking notes. Safety inspectors, quality officers, people no one saw in the early months when the rush was all that mattered. Work that used to move on habit now grinds through layers of checks. Cade stands in line waiting for a harness inspection while concrete trucks idle at the gate. The foreman keeps looking at the time. Every delay is another reason to snap at the crew. "They want miracles and paperwork at the same time," a laborer mutters near him. "You can only get one." Deadlines slip in small ways that stack up. The project manager's temper hangs over the site. He walks floors more often, his eyes running over work with a cold calculation. When he reaches Cade's section, his questions come hard and fast. About measurements, about wasted material, about time. Cade answers each one straight. He feels the manager weighing more than his words. There is something in that look that seeks a crack. Rena trails behind the manager with a notebook. She writes what he says, marks issues, assigns follow-ups. When she passes Cade, she does not pause. Her voice is professional, clipped. She talks to him the same way she talks to everyone else. "Make sure the anchors on this line match the plan," she says. "We do not have room for rework this week." To anyone listening, it sounds like a normal instruction. To Cade, it feels like a door slamming shut. In the locker area later, he scrolls through his phone. The message thread that once held their late-night jokes and risky plans is gone, not cleared by him, wiped from the app as if it never existed. only a blank gray space where their history should sit. He checks the call log and finds small gaps that do not match what he remembers. Times he knows they talk that no longer show. Like pieces of his life have been cut out and thrown away. When he sees Rena near the stairwell, he corners her for the first time since their last talk. "Did you get into my phone?" he asks. "Did you delete our messages?" She looks at him like the question is an insult. "Why would I touch your phone?" she says. "Maybe you did it drunk and forgot. That happens." "I do not drink," he replies. The edge in his voice draws a few glances from workers passing by. He lowers it. "I did not wipe anything. Someone did." Rena shrugs. "Then your phone glitched," she says. "You should focus on keeping your work clean instead of chasing ghosts in your call log." He knows gaslighting when he sees it, even if he never used that word before. She acts like the past month rewrote itself overnight, like he imagined stolen hours and messages sent from dark rooms. The more he pushes, the more she acts like he is unstable. "You told me to delete everything," he says. "Now it is gone, and you pretend you never said it." "That conversation never happened on record," she replies. Her eyes stay calm and cold. "There is nothing in any system that says otherwise. Think about that before you repeat it." She walks away, leaving him with anger that has nowhere to go. On break, he sits on the back of a delivery truck and stares at the job trailer. A coworker named Lyle joins him. Lyle has 10 more years on sites like this and the kind of slow, accurate way of talking that makes people listen. "You look like someone stepped on your throat," Lyle says. "What is going on?" "Just pressure from upstairs," Cade says. It is the safest truth he can give. "Feels like someone is hunting mistakes." "That man in the office has a record for that," Lyle replies. He jerks his chin toward the trailer. You cross him. He does not yell in front of everyone. He digs quiet, talks to safety, HR, whoever. Next thing you know, you are off the job and no one can tell you who made the call. "So people are scared of him," Cade says. "People are scared of giving him a reason," Lyle answers. "If you see something that looks like trouble, you stay far. That is how you keep your name clean." Katie thinks of the cleaned out message thread and the missing calls. Trouble has already found him. He just does not know how deep it runs. Days stretch with the same twisted rhythm. Inspectors circle. The manager's gaze sharpens. Rena moves between crews, collecting reports, filing issues, whispering with him in corners where others pretend not to look. One afternoon, Cade comes down a flight of indoor stairs and hears low voices on the landing below. He pauses before the last turn. The words drift up, shaped by the hollow concrete. "He is getting too close," Rena says. "He keeps asking questions." "You said you handled it," the manager replies. "You told me it was over." "I am trying, but he does not let it go," she answers. "If we push him too hard, he might talk." The manager's voice goes colder. "Then we give him something else to worry about," he says. "You keep your story straight. I will take care of the rest. No one threatens what I built here." A cart clatters on the floor above and covers the sound of Cade's light intake of breath. He backs up and cuts across another hall before they can catch him near the landing. The site feels different after that. The walls that were just unfinished surfaces now feel like ears. Every camera he passes makes his skin crawl. He sees Rena and the manager more often in quiet conversation, their heads close, their voices low. In the evenings, Cade sits in his car with the engine off and his phone in his hand. He considers writing everything down. Names, times, places they met, things she said. He thinks about sending it to someone outside the site who cannot be reached by the manager's power. Then he imagines a call from HR that starts with, "We got a complaint," and ends with, "You are no longer needed." He thinks about bills and rent and the way his mother looks at him with pride when he talks about steady work. On Friday, as the light drains from the sky and the last trucks roll out, he sees Rena and the manager near the gate. They stand close again. Not affectionate, strategic. He cannot hear the words, but he knows the talk is about him. He can see it in the way both of them look across the yard toward the section where he stacks material. He knows now that this is not only about a secret affair. It is about control, about who shapes the story if anything comes out, about who gets sacrificed to prove that the manager keeps a clean site. Someone is about to make a move. He can feel it in the way the air tightens around him as he walks off site, boots leaving deep prints in the mud that the next rain will erase. Chapter 3, The Breakpoint. The incident hits on a gray morning when the air smells of wet steel and exhaust. One moment, the site crawls along under the weight of new procedures. The next, alarms cut across the noise. A shout echoes from the far side of the slab. Work stops in a rough, stumbling wave. Kay drops the length of conduit he is carrying and moves with the crowd toward the commotion. A scaffold line hangs slack where it should be tight. A section of temporary guardrail leans at a bad angle. No one lies on the ground, but the faces around him are pale. The near miss is obvious. One slip, one mistimed step, and someone would have gone over the edge. Supervisors swarm the area. Radios hiss. The project manager appears fast, eyes sweeping the scene. He starts barking orders, "Shut this area, move those workers, get safety up here now." The mood shifts from panic to a strange, heavy silence. Within an hour, the whole site is in lockdown mode. No work on the affected levels. Inspections on every platform. Men pace and talk in low voices. Some stare at the edge, where the guardrail almost failed, and imagine their own fall. Katie is marking time near the tool crib when a voice calls his name. He turns and sees the manager standing near the steps of the office trailer. Rena waits just behind him, face unreadable. "I need to speak with you," the manager says, "in private." The trailer door closes behind them with a soft click that sounds final. The air inside carries stale coffee, paper, and the faint burn of electronics. Files are stacked in neat rows. A printout of the schedule hangs on the wall, Saturdays circled in red where overtime was planned. "Sit," the manager says. He remains standing. Rena takes a place near the side, against a cabinet. Her eyes stay on Cade, but offer nothing. Cade stays on his feet, his heartbeat drums in his ears. "What is this about?" he asks. The manager holds a folder. He taps it with two fingers. "We had a serious safety event this morning," he says. "Guardrail left unsecured. Workers exposed. You know the policy on that. Zero tolerance." Cade frowns. "My work area is on the other side of the site," he says. "I was not near that guardrail." "That is not what our information shows," the manager replies. He opens the folder. Inside are printed photos and screenshots. On top, a photo of an upper level from a site camera. A figure stands near the failing rail, tools in hand. The image is grainy, but the shape and build look like him. "Looks like you, from the back," the manager says. "Timed early this morning, before the incident." Cade studies the photo. The vest could be anyone's. The hard hat hides the head. The stance is familiar, but he knows memory can trick a person. The next page makes his breath catch. The print shows him in a side view, clear enough to make out his face under the brim of his hat. He is in a stairwell, close to Rena. Their heads tilt toward each other. The shadows and body language tell the rest. "This is from last month," the manager says. His voice is quieter now. "Care to explain what business you had alone with my partner in that stairwell during working hours?" The room feels smaller. The walls press close. Cade swallows. Each option runs through his mind and ends at a cliff. "I was talking to her," he says. "That is what it looks like." "Talking," the manager repeats. "You understand the position that puts everyone in, you, her, me, this company." Rena finally speaks. Her tone is cool. "He kept pushing," she says. "I tried to keep it professional. I told him to stop calling and texting. He would not listen." The rewrite of history is clean and ruthless. If he did not know the truth, he might believe her. She leaves out the first move, the secret meetings, the way she pulled him into quiet spaces. Her story starts at the point where he becomes a problem. "Here is where we are," the manager says. He closes the folder, rests both hands on it. "We have a safety failure and a conduct issue. Both can land in your lap. You were in restricted areas with someone close to management. You are tied to a section where a rail was left wrong. I can escalate this, and you will be off this site today with a record that will follow you." Silence stretches. Cade feels Rena's eyes on him, urging him toward the trap. "Or," the manager continues, "you can sign a statement that you were responsible for the guardrail oversight. You admit you rushed the setup and did not follow full procedure. We take internal action. A suspension, maybe a transfer off this site. The conduct issue does not leave this room. She walks clean. I walk clean. You take the hit and move on." There it is, the deal. his future narrowed to two bad choices. Rena leans forward slightly. "Cade," she says, for the first time in days, there is a hint of the old softness in her voice. "It is better if you just take this. If you fight, they will dig up everything. It will only get worse." He looks at her. For a second, something in him wants to surrender, to sign, swallow the story, and keep his head above water. The manager is right about one thing. A safety black mark and a conduct note could end his career on big jobs. But another part of him, the part that kept those messages when he should have deleted them, refuses to kneel. "You want me to lie," he says, "to say I almost killed somebody so you can keep your home and your site spotless." The manager's eyes harden. "Watch how you speak," he says. "No one said anything about death. No one was hurt. We are talking about paperwork and responsibility." "We are talking about you using me as a shield," Cade replies. His voice stays level, but his hands clench at his sides. "You knew about this from the start. You let it run until you had what you needed to control both of us. Now there is an incident, and suddenly I am the perfect problem to fix." Rena's face tightens. "You are making this worse," she says. "Think about your family. Think about money. Take the suspension and walk, please." He turns toward her. "Did you ever plan to tell me who you were to him before you pulled me into this?" he asks. "Or was I always just a tool for whatever you wanted from this job?" Her mouth opens, then closes. There is no answer that can fix what lies between them now. Cade faces the manager again. "I will not sign a lie," he says. "You can write what you want in your file, but I will not give you my name on it." The manager breathes in slowly. The line of his jaw flexes. "Then you leave me no choice," he says. "I will report you for insubordination and safety violation. You will be escorted off-site today. Do not expect a reference from me. You will not work under this company again." "So that is it," Cade says, "because I would not cover for your mess." "That is it," the manager replies. "You may go collect your things. Security will walk with you. If you speak about my personal life to anyone in this company, I will pursue every option I have." Cade looks at Rena one last time. "You still have a choice," he says. "You can tell the truth. You can say I did not put that rail up. You can say you were not some poor victim of my attention." Her eyes flicker. Fear, calculation, and something like regret chase across her face. In the end, fear wins. "I cannot risk losing everything," she whispers. "I am sorry." The words are small and late. They do not change the air in the room. Cade steps out of the trailer into a yard that has gone quiet. Men pretend they are not watching. Security falls in a few paces behind him as he walks toward the locker area. He empties his box into a bag. Gloves, tape measure, small things that used to mean honest work. He leaves his site badge on the bench. No one takes it from his hand. At the gate, he pauses. The structure he helped raise looms over him, floors stacked in gray pride. Somewhere inside, a loose rail tells the real story of who cut corners. Somewhere in that office, a folder with his name in it waits to be used as a warning. He could walk away and never look back, let the site keep its lies. Or he could call someone outside the chain, a regulator, a lawyer, a reporter, risk becoming the man who speaks up and loses more than a paycheck. For now, he does neither. He grips the fence, feels the cold bite of steel, and understands the full cost of the affair he stepped into. The job, his reputation, the way he sees himself. Behind him, engines hum. Ahead, the road is open and uncertain. He lets go of the fence and walks toward it, carrying nothing but his name and the weight of what he refused to sign away.